This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
Yo, Rob Harvilla from 60 Songs That Explain the 90s here to inform you that we are back with 30 more songs because the 90s were super long and had a ton of rad music. Please join us every Wednesday for more 60 Songs That Explain the 90s only on Spotify.
Winning Time, episode 9. It's the Prestige TV podcast. My name is Bill Simmons. I'm here with Chris Ryan, Wozni, Lambry. This episode took a dark turn as Spencer Haywood tried to kill Ronald Reagan. And that didn't happen. I actually enjoyed this episode.
You got your cocaine episode.
Got our cocaine episode. Got our answer to how are they going to speed through these last two episodes. And they sped through the last two episodes. They're getting us to the precipice of the finals, and they're setting up the Spencer Haywood stuff. They resolved the Jack McKinney stuff, which I think was pretty close to being accurate to what really happened with he couldn't really coach the team. What jumped out for you in this episode, Wes?
The Spencer Haywood stuff did, because earlier on some Prestige TV pods, I was like, yeah, I wonder where this story is going with Spencer Haywood. And Bill was like, oh, don't worry. It's going to get pretty ridiculous. And I tried to avoid, finding out what actually happened. But I happened upon it anyway. And I was like, that's crazy. That's like Latrell Sprewell, but like way, way, way crazier. And the show, I thought, did a good job. Wood Harris had some amazing scenes in this show, in this episode specifically. And that was kind of my favorite part, the Spencer Haywood time, you know, him just battling all of that stuff, Kareem sort of being his sponsor / like caretaker.
Yeah.
And just his mentality. Like, I thought they did an effective job of sort of explaining that character and his motivations.
What do you have, Chris?
I like the McKinney Riley Westhead stuff. I thought that's been the best part of the season to me, honestly, is those three actors doing stuff together. And just the idea that McKinney is this guy who's been waiting his whole entire life for something like this to happen. And then he gets to the precipice and it gets taken away from him this really unfairly because of the accident. But at the same time, like, the flip side of that is that Westhead's been waiting his entire life for a shot like this. And Riley's been waiting his entire life for a shot like this. And just watching that all come to head and have to be Bus who's deciding what's going to happen was just great.
Yeah, and West, like, just for some reason refuses to get involved. The Spencer Haywood piece, I remember when I was researching my book, and I didn't know, like, the full Haywood story and just being, like, blown away. I remember there was I'm trying to find this one quote where he said, hold on, this was from his book. So the Westhead stuff is real.
Yeah.
They changed the sequencing a little bit, because when he passed out was during the NBA finals. They made it seem in the show like it was before the NBA finals. But in his book he wrote, I left the forum and drove off in my Rolls that night thinking one thought, that Westhead must die. And decided over the next couple weeks to hire a hitman to kill Paul Westhead.
Yeah.
And I remember I'm researching this. I'm like, how did I not know about this? This is the single craziest NBA story I've ever heard in my life.
It's essentially an Elmore Leonard novel, because doesn't he get like his guy from Detroit and like their whole plan is going to be to cut his brakes? It's not even like, I'm just going to hit this guy outside of a restaurant. It's like, no, we're going to have this elaborate car accident thing.
This is NBA Fargo.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the other thing was, this was like their only power forward for the finals, which they make, they say that at one point in the show, they're like, hey, this is our only four, which is like a legitimate thing. And they were trying to basically give him as big of a rope as possible as he was melting down. He's got a really interesting backstory. Like, just, in my book, I called him the broken mirror, where he just, there's bad luck all the way around, right? He comes in, he goes to the ABA, he paves this way, he sues, he starts this whole lawsuit, ends up going there and has some of his best years, but nobody ever sees them. And then when he comes to the NBA, he's just basically bouncing around. Like, he won Rookie of the Year, he won an MVP, he goes to the Sonics, doesn't get around with Bill Russell. They gave him like a fucked up contract because they had those contracts back then where it's like, it's $11 billion, but it was, you know, paid out in $25,000 installments. And then he just kind of starts bouncing around and becomes this poster boy of the 70s. You know, like, he ends up on the Knicks. He's one of the many high powered superstars the Knicks have. That doesn't work out. He ends up in New Orleans. They move to Utah. All of a sudden he's in Utah, and then finally ends up on the Lakers. And it was like, this is going to be this guy's last chance. And then it couldn't have gone worse. And that's really it. I think he had a cup of coffee with the Bullets. I remember him being at a Celtics Bullets playoff series, but by that point there had been too much damage. But I'm trying to figure out what the comparison to a modern guy would be.
Oh,
so
God,
it would almost be like, because he was like better than Karl Anthony Towns, right? It would almost be like if this happened to like Embiid. Not that they were the same position, but he was like that level of talent.
Is Vin Baker still a modern guy? Because Vin Baker comes to mind.
Well, he's the next generation, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
As somebody who, you know, like, super talented, famously battled a lot of demons, all-star games, all of that stuff. Like, everybody recognized how great he was, and you couldn't understand what the issues were. But you see, like, back in the days when I was younger, like, you couldn't. Announcers or analysts would say stuff like, yeah, he's just battling some issues or demons. Yeah. And like a young person like me who didn't have drug addicts in their life, thankfully, whatever, I was too naive to sort of understand what these euphemisms meant. And to see Spencer Haywood like dealing with this, and, you know, just, I don't know what it was like to live in L.A., in 1980, but I know in 2022, if you're battling drug problems, this probably isn't the city you should move to. Yeah. Probably not. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that basically, I mean, Spencer Haywood is the basically symbolically in the show is the drug abuse that was probably happening in Los Angeles, but by all accounts, it was really widespread in the NBA itself throughout and obviously throughout Los Angeles, where everybody was like, this stuff's not addictive.
Yeah. And there's a lot of casualties, not just in sports, but all over the place. The NBA, I mean, losing Spencer, I think it was probably headed that way anyway, and the cocaine finished it off, because I think he had played a lot of basketball in the first part of the 70s. So by the time we got to the late 70s, maybe physically he wasn't the same way.
Yeah, it's got like, that whole conversation with Riley in the show about the knees, and it's just
but David Thompson was the biggest casualty, because he was the guy who was you know, he was poised to be Jordan before Jordan.
Yeah.
And you go back and you look at some of the stuff he did 76, 77, 78, and it's just, there was a whole bunch of other guys. Some of them have come out, some of them haven't, but I think it's safe to say there's stories from back then. And Spencer Haywood's on the record as saying he thought 80% of the league was dabbling in cocaine at that point. There was stories written in the LA Times, you know, where multiple people estimated it was somewhere between 50 and 70%. And this isn't just like, I'll do this once. This is like part of the day-to-day stuff. And it becomes down the road in the Perlman book, but also more in the Winning Time book that Steve Springer and Scott Osler wrote. It became a big piece of the Norm Nixon story. Where they thought he was on cocaine, and they started trailing him with security guards.
Yeah.
And it ended up, people always thought that was one of the reasons they traded him. It was never proven that he was doing anything. But in general, there was a big paranoia, because they're handing out these big contracts back then. And you know what these guys are doing. And a lot of them are just, you go to the basketball references of some of these guys, where like they're age 24, 25, 26, and they're just falling off a cliff. And it's like, what happened? They get hurt? It's like, no, didn't really get hurt.
Yeah.
So with the Spencer thing, it's interesting that he passes through that vortex on this team that becomes this, you know, the Celtics and Lakers, the two iconic teams of the decade. It makes sense that one of them would have had a cocaine thing, but it ended up both of them because the Celtics had Len Bias. Right. Who was the Sixers? Did the Sixers have a drug one? Was there anything?
Not really, right? Nothing historical. I mean, like, obviously, like, there's partying that goes on, but I didn't really ever remember, like, a really famous cocaine situation with the Sixers.
Yeah, I don't think so either. There probably was. We just didn't know about it. So the Spencer thing was the big thing. The other cool stuff was this was the best Kareem episode, right? He had the most to do. He had two really big Haywood scenes. He held the team meeting to try to figure out if they're going to kick him out or not. Tells Haywood he cast a deciding vote. I liked when Haywood was standing up next to him. It seemed like he was going to punch him. Kareem, not afraid at all.
Right.
And then had the moment with Magic at the end. But I think that Kareem, I talked in an earlier episode about I wasn't sure what they were doing with Kareem. I thought he was too stiff, but I think it paid off. Waz, you were vindicated. You were telling me it was going to pay off with Kareem.
Yeah, and they carefully just show you why this guy is the leader that he is, right? And why people were willing to follow him. And what I love is just the deference that everybody up and down the roster shows this guy, like calling him Cap and like just the respect. And then you realize like he had already won like 3 league MVPs by this point. Like he was clearly already.
Oh, it was like he had won like 5.
There you go. So like one of the best basketball players anybody had ever seen already. And you see the respect that he has. And what I like is how serious he takes it, right? Like, you know, he's not exactly Zion Williamson in this situation. He's like, no, like, this is my responsibility. This is my charge. I'm going to be the one that delivers the news to Spence. I'm going to explain to him exactly how it went down. I'm going to be the one even advocating on behalf of Spence at first and saying, look, this is our guy. Like, should we cast him aside? He's made promises. And, you know, let the team decide democratically. Like, I just thought that was amazing stuff. The stuff that he's building with Magic and the sort of yin and yang, good cop, bad cop thing that they got going on is incredible.
You know, with these workplace shows, whether it's like West Wing or whether it's NYPD Blue or whatever, there's just basically that balance between the stuff in the show that can only be in the show because of what the occupation is that it's following. So like in West Wing, you'll have like all this like nitty gritty of how they're making a bill or something like that. And then the other side of it is their personal lives and how you basically draw viewers in by being like, wow, these people's lives are just like mine. Like, and then there's the whole other side where you're like, I could never live some, I never know, would have any experience of something like this. And with this show, they're doing a nice job balancing like, everybody's got a mom, everybody's got a family, everybody's got, you know, like relationship issues or whatever. But my favorite part of the show is definitely like the really, really nitty gritty. Like, what if you could see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar show Magic how to shoot a skyhook?
Yeah.
And that to me, like when, for all the stuff that was good in this episode, and I think, you know, John C. Reilly and Sally Field are really good in the episodes that they had, in the scenes that they had, when they get to the part where it's like, Kareem is showing Magic how to shoot a skyhook and like the Fletch keyboards are playing, I'm like, yo, this is why I signed up for
and
show
knowing that
place.
Magic is going to use a skyhook to kill Bill's Celtics at some point is incredible.
Yeah, that hurt. I don't know, felt like he pushed off a little bit. If this show was 8 episodes instead of 10, I think we lose all the Sally Field stuff. That's my least favorite part of the show. I think it's well acted. I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to do backstory with
they're trying
with
to humanize a guy that probably like they're trying to give like an emotional balance to a guy who I think
is rich
would not
and
have that.
Around.
Yeah. Yeah. He's basically a rich a womanizer. It's yeah. like himself into the greatest franchise or like yeah. one of the most valuable franchises.
He's
in
his 50s. He's dating college women. Like it would be tough to humanize this situation. And look, John C. Reilly, I think he should win an Emmy for this. I think he's incredible. And the more that I watch the show, the more that I feel like Will Ferrell could not do this shit.
No, it would have been a different show.
Fucking shot. He just could not do this stuff. Like these emotional breakdowns that seem like really believable. Like there's just a tenderness and a sensitivity and just empathy that John C. Reilly is exuding, that just like, I would be like, what the fuck is Will Ferrell doing? Like, what is Ron Burgundy doing right now? It would be a problem.
It would have been closer.
Will Ferrell was doing this.
It would have been closer to Eastbound. It would have been a comedy. I think it would have been more cartoonish. Yeah. I think that might have been cool. Like, there's a version of Winning Time that you do where it's like a 30 minute kind of like elevated comedy that's like, and everything is really cartoony, and maybe you even like pump the McKay stuff even harder. But this, they've decided to make it basically into a prestige drama, which is probably the smarter play.
A slightly ridiculous prestige drama. I mean, we have moments where Larry Bird's coming out of the TV talking shit to Magic.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. They still have the absurdity. Yeah.
Do you wish they didn't have that stuff in this, or do you think they need it?
I think that they've done a really good job peeling it away. So like when the show first starts, it's so over the top. It's so like text on the screen, breaking the fourth wall, five different film stocks, you know, like all this stuff is happening. We're doing animation. We've got voiceover that's very 2022 voiceover about stuff happening in 1979. And as the show has gone on, I think that they've done a good job being like, what do we really need? And then this episode largely is very, very human. Like, it's like pretty much like, here are all the people that got lost along the way to this championship. And it was like a pretty thematically pretty coherent episode about like the cost of this stuff, you know, and I thought that worked, but I wonder whether or not, if you just do the first few episodes straight, if it becomes as buzzy as it has become. Although I guess, you know, maybe like it seems like people like the show more now than they did when it first premiered.
Do you feel like it's buzzy though? I can't tell. I don't have a feel for it, and I saw stuff online because I don't. Anecdotally, to me, I feel like some people in my life are watching it. I also have a bunch of people in my life that don't like it. Mm.
Yeah, I think the Jerry West stuff has been so, it's been all over the news. And so that's kind of generated some. And HBO is commenting, and HBO is defending themselves, but also saying like, it's fiction, you know, we get to do what we do. And I think that stuff's been all over the news. But it feels like it's pretty successful. They re-upped it for a second season, which I don't even think was even a question. I don't see how you only do this in one season if you're gonna.
It's also like impossible to tell right now with like 45 shows on at once, like what's buzzy.
I know. I just watched the first two episodes of Gaslit, and I think I might have been the only one.
Yeah.
Where it's like Julie Roberts and Sean Penn wearing a fat suit. And I don't know a single person who's watching it. I reached out, I asked Chris and Sean. Sean said he hasn't gotten to it yet. Sean watches everything. He doesn't sleep. He's a vampire. He hadn't even watched it yet. When I think big picture, especially as we head to this last episode, which is clearly going to be Magic, you know, we know what happens in real life. Kareem gets hurt in game 5. It's actually the best game of his career in a lot of ways because he's awesome in the game. It's a 2-2 series. Kareem gets hurt, goes off, comes back, and heroically carries them the last 5 minutes, which, you know, I think Kareem's the third best player of all time on any list by any calculation. If anyone else in the top 10 had a game like Kareem had in game 5 of the 1980 finals, like, if Kobe had ever done this, we would just, like, every Monday we'd have to be like, we're all going to spend an hour talking about this.
For sure.
With Kareem, it's just, it goes kind of with, you know, and some of it's self-inflicted because he was a guy that never wanted to play the game. He never wanted to open up to people. He had the goggles. He was the most methodical player we had of that era. People just couldn't connect with him. And I count myself as a little kid from that era. Never felt like, it wasn't like, oh, cool, Kareem's coming to town. It just wasn't like that with him. That game might have been tape delayed. I know game 6 was, but I'm pretty sure game 6 wasn't on live. But game 5, I think, was tape delayed too. So like a lot of people didn't even see it when it happened. And it ended up being the greatest moment of his career. So they're going to have to handle that. And then they're going to have to figure out the Magic jump in center. Chris Ryan, how old were you for that game? Like 5?
I was 3. Yeah.
Yeah. No memories, probably.
No.
Magic jump in center. So this is some real NBA IP here that you can't get too creative with. And yet, Wes, how do you think they're going to get creative?
The suspense of this show of like, what are they going to like actually do accurately and what are they going to take to
Spencer Haywood's rolling up with the Hell's Angels.
Right. It's like the Boogie Nights drug scene.
Yeah.
It's got somebody throwing firecrackers.
Like, what are they going to be true to and what are they not is so hilarious. But I feel like the magic playing center in the finals clinching game is like his origin story, like straight up. Like this is Batman's parents getting smoked in the alleyway. This is, you know, the radioactive Peter Parker shit. Like this is his origin story. He played center because the greatest player of all time to that point could not play. And they won, and he was a rookie, and like, you know, like this is where the glory starts. So I don't see how they get that part wrong. Maybe the Kareem stuff, they fudge a little bit, but Magic taking them home is the story.
They don't have to. I mean, I think that there's been parts where they've changed things at least based on like, so for instance, like in the newspaper accounts of the decision to go with Westhead and Riley instead of McKinney, I would not say that Buss comes off as sensitively as he does in the show. You know, like he's more like, I bought this team to have fun. I just really wasn't having fun with Jack McKinney. So I just went with my gut. And it wasn't like, oh man, this is like the hardest decision I've ever had to make. It was just kind of like Buss being Buss. They've changed certain things to make certain characters feel a little bit maybe more like three-dimensional or human. But when it comes to the basketball, like on the court like this in the finals, which is something that like, yeah, maybe some people don't remember a January game in Detroit, but they're going to fucking remember the NBA finals. Like they should just play it straight because you can't beat the truth is better than fiction in this case.
Well, they also, that McKinney thing where he didn't recognize Buss was the thing that happened. I don't know if it happened the way they did it in the scene, but that's an important piece of why Buss was like, this guy didn't recognize me. He probably can't be coach of my team. And he has quotes, I think during that year where he's just like, this is my entire life. Like I can't mess around with this. I need to make sure this team I'm passing off to some good hands. There's some stuff. I want to talk about the Jamal Wilkes piece of this.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So Jamal Wilkes, who in Magic's game 6 is the other hero of that game. He has 37 points. He makes a ton of big shots. It's basically Magic and Jamal Wilkes together beating the Sixers. They scored, I think, 79 of the points and made every big shot. And it was the best game he ever played. James Worthy did a similar thing, 1988 game 7, and became Big Game James, basically off the game 7. Jamal Wilkes did the same thing. Nobody cared. Nobody cares about him on the show. He has no lines. You wouldn't know that he was either the third or fourth best player on this
only
team.
Reason
him
I
versus
know he's
Norm
on the
Nixon.
Show, Bill, is because his son is portraying him and looks exactly like him.
Right. But the he doesn't have lines. Twins. There's no backstory. What do you think made... Was he just boring? Like, should he be offended by this? What do you think made them say, Jamal Wilkes, and just toss him aside? I don't really get that.
I just think that they make their decisions based on, like, they just picked 6 characters or 7 characters, and they're like, we got to ride these guys. We can't just make, here's this Jamal Wilkes detour that we're going to do. Or there's a couple of guys in the locker room who I'm like, they talk every couple
so
episodes,
much,
and then I'm like, who is this guy again? But, like, you know, I think
the white guy, Landsberger, who was like a big doofus comedy relief in the books, but in the show, he barely has any lines.
Yeah. So I just think that ultimately, like every show that's based on a true story or is based on some sort of historical moment, ultimately has to
make their
sacrifices.
Choices.
Yeah. They have to make sacrifices. And maybe,
Think they had meetings about how to make the Jamal Wilkes character work? They're like, what trait could we give him? Could we make him like a Cousin Greg?
I don't know if you're Jamal Wilkes. Maybe you're kind of like, yeah, I'm glad I didn't get much of a winning time treatment.
I think he might be a winner.
Yeah.
He has people in his life who are like, hey, what happened? Why aren't you in winning time that much? He's like, whoo, thank God.
Everybody else seems to be bitching about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, because here's the thing with Jamal Wilkes, like really famous UCLA player, played on the Bill Walton teams, gets drafted by Golden State. He's in the NBA Finals in his first year. They win the title with him. He's, at that time, he's Keith Wilkes. he's in a movie called Cornbread Earl and Me, which was a very like formative movie for me when I was a kid. And he plays this basketball high school star who gets shot, and they end up being a big trial about it. But it was like one of the first times they used a real life athlete and just kind of threw them into a TV or movie. Then he becomes one of the first free agents ever. He goes from the Warriors, jumps to the Lakers, and he was good. Like, I would say the small forward position was like legitimately loaded back then, but he was good. I think one of the best, maybe 25, 30 players in the league. And they just punted on him. They were like, cool.
If you think I'm going to shed tears for Jamal Wilkes when the Sixers have gotten, they got one Dr. J scene, and then it's like, oh yeah, the Sixers beat the Celtics. It's like, what?
I can't get
a montage.
Well, that was the other thing I noticed where they gloss over the fact that they beat Seattle. Now, this is hardcore NBA nerd stuff, but Seattle had made the 78 finals. They won in 79. They were the favorites in 1980, and then the Lakers, they became the co-favorites. And that was like a big series back then. It was like Seattle, Lakers, this is, sir, you know, it's the equivalent of like Golden State Phoenix playing this year. And they gave no bet. They just kind of punted on that one too. They didn't even give the last year's champs any of that stuff. They're just like, hey, they've gotten their revenge.
I would be really curious to know in the making of this show, because like in the first few episodes, it's almost like painstakingly, like we're going to go through like, this is an entire episode about how they like, I mean, we don't even get to
the preseason.
Right, but we get like Tarkanian, like it's preseason is like episode 4 or 5. So it's interesting that they'd spent, like, I wonder whether or not they had gotten through some of the series and they were like, we kind of need to speed things up a little bit here.
I think that's 100% what happened. That's why I brought it up. I think it's
there's
crazy.
A world in which like the you know, like the second season starts with these playoffs or something at the pace that they were going. Like the season didn't start until like episode 5 or 6, I don't think. And it's been like 3 episodes of it.
I'm way more interested in that Seattle series as Spencer Haywood's completely falling apart. Seems like there's more drama than, hey, what happened in that third preseason game in Palm Springs? I think you're right, Chris. I think they probably moved a certain pace and they realized like, oh shit, we only have 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And now they're cramming in a bunch of stuff.
Because Adam McKay is the executive producer, right? But I wonder how, and I've actually spoken to him before about his like hoops addiction or whatever, right? Like he's obsessed with basketball, but I wonder to the extent the showrunners and the people who actually make the show are, because people like us can make drama out of anything.
Yeah.
Sports related, right? Like we could see the story in our heads because we're so obsessed with this shit out of every single little detail.
Oh yeah.
You know, I wonder if somebody who's not, you know, day to day living and dying with NBA basketball and stories kind of sees certain things and be like, I don't know if that's so interesting. And that's why we don't get something like the Seattle and Lakers series, you know?
Yeah, because one of the things with the Seattle series was Kareem, it was always about protecting Kareem, having the right power forward next to him who could, because these teams would just beat the shit out of Kareem. That was always the strategy. Occasionally he would snap. Kent Benson elbowed him. Kareem got mad, whirled around, cold cocks him, and breaks his hand. And then a couple of months later, Kermit Washington punches Rudy Tomjanovich, and Kermit was like Kareem's enforcer. It was always about, we got to get Kareem an enforcer, which is why they got Spencer Haywood, why they had Jim Jones. But that Seattle series, Seattle was this big physical team that's beating the shit out of them as Spencer Haywood is in a spiral and they don't have that physical presence next to them. So I don't know. You could have spent 10 minutes on it, maybe.
I'm just right now, I'm just like going through my head of Winning Time season 1, the Bill Simmons cut. We got to get this on HBO Max.
Hardcore NBA.
It's just Jamal Wilkes and the Sonic series.
I was like, guys, I need a little more about DJ picking up Magic full court in the first two games of the series.
A much more thoughtful depiction of Larry Bird.
Can we have Larry visit a charity?
Yeah.
Maybe talk about how great he is. They took Larry and I don't, it's almost funny.
He's like Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone.
They just
I'll see you next year, fucker.
Like, honestly, he's out of deliverance. They might as well have him on a porch with two guys playing the banjo.
They didn't give him a snaggle tooth, so that's nice.
True.
And there's no references to incest, so That's good. Yeah, they cut him some yet. Slack there.
predictions for the last episode, Wes?
Man, I really want to see Magic sort of, you know, become Magic, right, to the team. Because to the team, he's still this young, doofy-ass young player that nobody respects, for real. And I would like to see how they handle that transformation from him being the Buck, as Kareem called him in the meeting, to, yo, Magic is the guy, you know, and he needs the respect and the deference from the team. So I would love to see how they handle that. Because right now, he's still largely just the young guy who is getting punked, even by marginal players. It's just like, bro, I don't respect you. You might be out of the league in 2 years. I don't give a damn about you. So I want to see how they handle that.
Chris, before I get to your prediction, I'm really impressed by the guy who plays Magic. Mm. I wonder, like, and we didn't really love, they relied on him too much the first couple episodes. Now it's the right balance of him. But,
Quincy,
man, that's hard to pull off the Magic Johnson part with the kind of charisma. And I just think he's done a really good job. And Kareem's growing on me, too. They hit the two parts that they needed to hit. Nobody else really, you know, you can use actors for whatever. Those two.
Count John C. Reilly. I feel like I'm this guy's agent at this point. But he's nailing his Dr. Buss.
So, Chris, before I get to your prediction, I just want to point out, I have not seen the 10th episode yet. Game 6 was tape delayed.
Okay. I don't think this is going to be a plot point.
Well, they're probably going to bend the rules and have everybody watching the game live, I'm guessing.
Oh, okay.
They're going to look the other way in the tape delayed part. But this was a game that started at 11:30. Basically all around the country, unless you're on the West Coast. How are they going to handle that? We'll see. What's your prediction for game six or for the finals, Chris?
I was just trying to figure out who they're going to have play Billy Cunningham. You know, do we get like Ron Howard?
Oh, wow.
You know, like
Ron Howard would be good. Yeah, well, then they have I don't know what they're capable of with the Spencer Haywood piece of this either.
Yeah, right. Because
in real life,
already...
we know he tried to hire mafia people to tamper with Paul Westhead's breaks.
That's
what that means on this show, I'm prepared for anything.
No, my prediction for this last episode is definitely in a champagne bath, we see Riley with the hair slicked back. And like the moment where like, oh, okay, he's stepping into it now.
I would love to see them say fuck it and say Magic scored like 60 points with 20 rebounds and 5 assists in the final game. Like, why not? Bet in the stats a little bit.
Yeah, and then Jerry West walks out and pulls his nuts out. You know,
I think, by the way, I was thinking for season 2, they should just go a whole other level with West.
Yeah.
Make him the Zodiac killer, whatever they have to do.
Just to troll him because, like, yeah. People have gotten way too bent out of shape about this Jerry West stuff. It's kind of ridiculous.
It's funny. I always thought his reputation was always like major curmudgeon, like major. We always heard that about the
logo.
You
know the part that I didn't like about this episode was Jerry West not having the courage of his convictions. Like he refused to just say who he thought was better. That doesn't jibe with the Jerry West who was just like this Magic Kid's trash. Like, what are we doing here? You know what I'm saying? Like, he just can't bring himself to say that the coach who fell and broke his freaking head and face shouldn't come back after these guys brought this team to 60 wins. I thought that was a little bit annoying.
I noticed they had West in the trailer for the Magic show that's on Apple. And like Wes is like, his smile lit up the room. And I'm like, sure. Right.
Jerry's like, can you pick the happiest soundbite for me for the Magic trailer? What's interesting is I'm way more interested in Winning Time than I am in the Magic show. I haven't watched 1 minute of the Magic show.
Why would I watch Magic show? It's just freaking, you know, propaganda at this point. Like, we know Magic's story. Like, give me a break.
He's been in three documentaries already.
Come on. I'm good. There's no rush on that. Just a couple of other things that I thought was cool about the episode.
Yeah.
There's a part in the locker room. Some of these details are just so dope. Like, Kareem is wearing his UCLA warm-up, which I thought was fire. And Coop is wearing a five-star basketball camp t-shirt, which I just thought was an amazing detail to nail, because, you know, people who don't know about Five Star, it's like this really famous camp. Jordan, a bunch of people went there. Like, it used to be a rite of passage for all the biggest hoopers in the world. This is before ABCD and all the crazy shit, Nike Hoop Summit and all of that. Before all of that stuff, Five Star Camp was like a big deal. If to have Coop rocking a Five Star shirt, that was a beautiful detail right there.
Coop, who gets way more screen time on the show than Jamal Wilkes, who's way better. Coop is backing him up, basically. Whatever. All right. Episode 10, the final episode, will be on Sunday night. We're going to be on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll bring a fourth. That might have to be a four person.
Will it be Jerry West?
Maybe it'll be the logo. No, Jerry West is in jail. He's committed multiple crimes. No, God only knows what'll happen to Jerry. Very excited for Jerry season two. Very excited for the season finale of this. And if you want to listen to us talk about We Own This City, we might be doing that tomorrow. So stay tuned for that. This episode was produced by Troy Farkas. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.